Hey listeners, it's your host, Aisha. So before I tell you about the episode that you're about to hear, I have to tell you about what I did this weekend. I drove to Dallas, which is like a million miles from Houston, to see the Dallas Symphony Orchestra. My friend Brett Mitchell was conducting them, and the guitarist and composer Bryce Dessner was there. Both of those guys have been on this show, by the way. Anyway, the Dallas Symphony Orchestra does this thing called Remix, where they're concerts that are aimed at bringing in new audiences. Everything on the program that night that we went to see them was 30 years old or newer. It was a sort of more relaxed environment, and I gotta tell you, it was like the most fun I've ever had seeing classical music. I really had a genuinely good time, and I love what they're doing there. So if you're in Dallas, make sure that you go out to one of these Remix performances. Speaking of new classical music, in the episode that you're about to hear, you are going to meet Nadia Sirota, who, among many things, is the host of WQXR's podcast, Meet the Composer. And Meet the Composer is all about living composers. Nadia is going to introduce you to some like fresh new classical music that I think you're really going to enjoy. I know I did. And speaking of enjoying, because we're all about segues here, if you enjoy our show, make sure to go to iTunes and subscribe to us and rate us and review us, because it is awesome when you do. All right, that's enough of me. Enjoy the show. My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark secret. I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock, and I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical, but I really want to learn. So, every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know, and then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and here with me today is Nadia Sirota. She is many things, actually. She's a violist who's collaborated with people like Missy Mazzoli and Nico Muley, both artists who've been on this show, by the way, on her albums. And she's worked with people like Marin Alsop, Itzhak Perlman, and the Silk Road Ensemble as well. She's a podcaster. She hosts and produces the podcast Meet the Composer for WQXR, which explores the lives and music of living composers. Nadia is a member of several groups, including Y Music and Alarm Will Sound, and she's worked with some of my favorite rock musicians, including Grizzly Bear, Jonesy, and Arcade Fire. Nadia Sirota, welcome to the Classical Classroom.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, I want to ask you a little bit about your podcast, Meet the Composer, which I was listening to some of today, your episode with Nico Muley, the most recent one, I guess. And man, I gotta say, I love how it's put together.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, like the way that you put his music together with what he was saying was just how it was kind of punctuating the words that he was saying. It was pretty brilliant.
So you have expressed to me many times extensive frustration about various journalists asking you, you know, how do you think you became so successful,
right,
or something like that. Can you just talk about why that's frustrating to you?
I never felt successful. I felt gloomy. You know what I mean? Because successful, the implication is like...
Yeah, so that little bit of sort of sound manipulation and sound world is very much the brainchild of my producer, Alexander Overington, who's a brilliant... He's actually a composer himself. And what's been really cool about our working together is that we do try to have a somewhat of a musical kind of compositional quality to the shows themselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we do go through the life of the composer and give you some facts and music that they like and what they listen to. But the other idea behind it is to sort of create a sound collage of mm-hmm. their world, of the stuff that goes into their heads and then comes out sort of as their music. So by the time you're listening to their music, you have an incredible amount of sound information, so that hopefully you can take more away from the show than you would if we were just sort of talking.
It really works, and it makes it very exciting too. And I'm also interested in how you developed the show. Why did you feel there was a need for it?
So as many people who have recently graduated school do, I went through a little bit of a panic, like entitled, "How do I make a living?" and, you know, was playing viola and had a lot of projects. But at that point, most of the projects were, like, super losing money, like, not even slightly not losing money. You know, the gigs that I did were more sort of less soul satisfying. And I finally was like, you know what I should do is get a job. So the job that I ended up getting was ripping CDs into the database at WNYC.
Really? Were you, like, kind of digitizing their library?
Yes, way back. Yeah, this was the beginning of a digital library.
Oh, okay, well, I'm a librarian. That's what I did when I first came here to the station.
So we definitely have that in common.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, my boss at the time was Limor Tomer, who now runs the concert series at the Metropolitan Museum. But she said, I just want to hear what you sound like on air, and if you're terrible, we'll just pretend it never happened. And so I started hosting overnight music and doing other stuff, and eventually started hosting on Q2 Music, which mm-hmm. is a streaming radio station devoted to contemporary classical music. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I try to do in sort of every branch of my life is get new music out to a larger audience, because I feel like it is so, there's such amazing stuff happening right now, such amazing pieces being written. And there's tons of people who wouldn't hesitate to go see a contemporary art show at a gallery, wouldn't hesitate to read contemporary fiction, you know?
Yeah.
But they might not know anything about classical music, let alone contemporary music, which we have tended for some reason to market towards a tiny subset of the already small classical music audience.
Right. Yeah.
So from my perspective, I'm like, well, there's plenty of people who like read interesting stuff all the time, and I would like to make a show that positioned contemporary classical music to those people who, you know, may have a ton of information about music, may have less, but who are probably pretty curious and pretty interested. So that's the sort of impetus behind creating the show. And then I was really, really fortunate. I recorded in a recording studio in Iceland for a record label called Bedroom Community.
Oh, wow.
And their intern at that studio at that time was this very, very able kid called Alex, who then moved to New York City. And I sort of said, you know what you've never done but you should do is produce radio. And we both sort of figured out the kind of podcasting storytelling medium together. So both of us came from, you know, contemporary classical background. He's a composer, I'm a performer. And we have been learning the ropes of storytelling radio. And it's been really fun and really exciting.
That's awesome. So, okay, well, let's get to the music now. You clearly have a passion for new classical music. And the first thing I'm wondering, I talked to Nico a little bit about this, but the what do you call it? Do you call it classical music? Do you call it concert music? What's your preferred terminology?
Yeah, terms are frustrating, and I'm not sure that there's any real reason behind it, but I tend to call it new classical music or contemporary classical music or new music or just whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Just music, maybe.
Music. But, you know, I mean, there is a thing where I think the biggest difference for me between classical music and pop music, and people definitely are constantly breaking this down, but like classical music for the most part is notated music.
Mm.
It's music that people communicate to the performers with via pieces of paper.
Yeah.
And then we read that and interpret it and play it for an audience. And so there is like, I love being a performer. I am not a composer. I am like a performer.
Yeah.
And I love that process of trying to figure out like what the composer was up to, what is the form of this piece, what's the structure, like where's the beauty. And then it's my job to try to communicate that in real time to an audience, which is crazy. So I'm trying to come up with an interpretation and a way of expressing this music where people can get ideas of structure, get ideas of poetry live and in and you know on this time frame which the composer has provided. So that is like a pretty unique to classical music thing, that act of translation. When you think about going to see like a songwriter or a band, the performer and the composer are often the same person.
Yeah.
Now, that's not true for, like, every single pop singer. You know, Beyoncé has sung a ton of stuff that was written for her.
Right.
And sometimes some of those things can be notated as well, but it's a different process on some level. And so the text of pop music, I think, is the recording, right?
Yeah.
The CD itself is the piece, whereas the text for us are these manuscripts, and that's an interesting process. And there's also plenty of composers that, like I think about Valgeir Sigurdsson, he notates music often, but also sometimes he'll just create the whole piece inside the machine, like in Pro Tools or whatever. So yeah, it's hard to know where the one thing leaves off and another thing starts these days. And I think that's a beautiful confusion, honestly.
I do too. And the sort of mixture that's happening between pop music, rock music, classical music.
Yeah, what do you call that stuff also? Yeah. Like, it's so hard to know what to call anything.
Yeah. Well, what do you sort of look for in a piece of new classical music that to you makes it not just interesting, not just personally, but makes it engaging for a larger audience?
Yeah, I think it's two things. It's material and form. And when those two things are working in concert, like, that's the music that completely gets to me, and I just love, and I can't get enough of it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the composers that I have commissioned, it's because there was something exciting about their material that drew me in. Mm-hmm. And then, like, picking the piece apart or performing the piece or preparing the piece or whatever, I start just completely being blown away by the craft of it. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's sort of the best case scenario. I didn't actually send you this ahead of time or tell you I was going to talk about this, but it occurs to me right now, I would love to talk about Andrew Norman, who is a composer that I've worked with quite a bit. And he actually wrote a piece for my sextet, Why Music, mm-hmm. that is exactly this thing. So he basically has taken some of the timbres and colors of sort of mid-century modernist music, which is the stuff that I think sometimes people find the most alienating in contemporary classical music. Uh-huh. So he's taken all of these extended techniques and scratch tones and really complicated textures and then so sort of taken that surface and put it onto this form and set of chords and structure that is really kind of an old school, satisfying, like, cadential, beautiful, open sound.
Wow. Well, now we have to hear some of that.
Yeah, totally. The piece is called Music in Circles.
Andrew Norman, Music in Circles?
Andrew Norman, Music in Circles, yep. Yeah, so this is Andrew Norman's piece. And as you can hear already, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, what is happening?
So the viola, which is actually literally me in this case, he asks you to block these chords with your left hand and then to bounce the bow completely vertically on the string. So I'm not going back and forth, up and down at all. Uh-huh. It's all just a vertical bounce. And the cool thing about that is it means I can actually really get all three notes at once, which is something usually that you have to, like, break a chord like that if you wanted to play it at once. Mm-hmm. So it starts with this vertical bounce, and all of the instruments are making these weird whistling sounds like a tea kettle and overpressure, and that kind of ends up escalating into this ecstatic, completely loud, crazy, messy moment where we're all playing this one fragmented melody completely out of sync with each other. Yeah. And, like, as loudly and as joyfully as possible. And I love these sounds. Are not sounds that I've heard before.
Yeah.
Even just bouncing my bow vertically on the string. I've done that actually just with the wood part of the bow, which is a technique I've done before, mm-hmm. but never with the hair. And he just comes up with these really interesting and ingenious extended techniques that then create music that, on the one hand, seems very familiar.
Yeah.
Harmonically. But just the surface of it and the colors are so new to me. I really think it's brilliant.
So any of this accomplished in production, or is this all purely just the
This is all acoustic instrument sound.
Wow, wow.
And it's six people. It sounds like it could be like 50.
Uh-huh, it does.
The group is, you know, flute, clarinet, trumpet, violin, viola, cello. Uh-huh. And it's just, you know, I don't know. I love this piece. I love his voice. It's interesting and singular, and this is a great example of something which on the surface the sounds are just like pull you in, like, what is that? Mm-hmm. And then the more you sort of pull the piece apart, this is where the big melody starts in the trumpet, and then we all sort of come in imitation of that, and right now it's all very strictly notated, but in just a minute he gets rid of the bar lines and tells us to go at our own speed. And so the whole thing kind of flies into this like weird like microgravity where we're all kind of going at our own paces and floating around in this very similar way, but not 100% controlled as it was before.
Yeah.
So now we're all playing at our own speeds all of a sudden. I love it. And the melody itself is just this unzipping of this, you know, the intervals get bigger and bigger and bigger.
You know, it reminds me just a little bit of some parts of Sufjan Stevens' song Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because a couple of the people in our group actually were on that record.
Really?
So sometimes people are like, oh, it sounds a little like Sufjan. It's like, well, it's the same flute player, okay. Same clarinet player,
there
same violinist. Like,
that's awesome. Yeah. Wow. Well, let's go to another piece of music, and I'd love to see something else that you're excited about today.
Sure. Let's talk about Caroline Shaw. Caroline Shaw is awesome.
And who is she? Where does she hail from?
Yeah, she lives in New York City now. She went, I think, to Rice University and then to Yale. And I met her as a violinist, sort of new music-y freelancer person in New York City. And I knew that she sang also. And then one day, I remember because I was in an airplane and we landed at 3:00 and I looked at my phone and the New York Times was like, the Pulitzer Prizes have been announced. And I clicked through a little alert and it said a Pulitzer Prize for music composition went to Caroline Shaw. And I was like, must be a different Caroline Shaw. It was literally my thought, like, this can't be the same person, because I didn't really know that she composed. And it turns out that she totally won a Pulitzer for this piece that she wrote, Partita for 8 Voices. She was like 32 or really young. She was the youngest ever awardee of the Pulitzer.
Oh my gosh.
And she just has this incredibly beautiful compositional voice and approach towards composition. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't believe that you sort of need to be a, you know, capital C composer to write. She thinks every musician might have something inside of them and they should just express it.
Mm-hmm.
So she's in this vocal octet called Roomful of Teeth.
Yeah.
And they're really fantastic. And
it's a great name, too.
It's a total great name. And one of the first things they did when they got together, they're led by a guy called Brad Wells. And Brad was like, great. So you guys are all very beautiful singers in the classical tradition. Today we're going to learn how to yodel and we're going to learn how to do Tuvan throat singing. And he brought in these specialists to come and teach them how to use their voices in ways that, A, like, they had never done before. B, I've definitely seen singers pull more crazy stuff than, like, oh, that's going to hurt my voice, I can't do it, you know?
Yeah.
So this group is definitely amazing and unique for being able to just be open to all these different styles.
Yeah.
And so early on, Caroline was like, well, I love these techniques. I'd love to sort of write for them. And she wrote a piece shortly after that first session called the Partita for 8 Voices, which, you know, takes the partita, the sort of structure of a Baroque partita.
What is a partita, by the way?
So if you think about like the Bach violin partitas or whatever,
okay.
It's a set of pieces that are all dance movements. It's like literal Baroque dance movements. So there's you can learn how to dance a sarabande or a courante or any of these things, or an allemande. They basically just have like very specific rhythmic footprints. So Bach was riffing on that and wrote all these amazing solo violin pieces. Caroline riffed also on those forms, those literal Baroque dance forms, but wrote this incredible set of pieces for her group Roomful of Teeth, which then won a Pulitzer. And actually, she's literally done some collaborations with Kanye West of late.
Oh, that's great.
Because I think he was like, this music's amazing. So we should listen to some of it if we can.
Yeah, let's hear some of that.
To the side.
To the side.
To the side.
And around.
Through the middle and.
To the side.
To the side.
To the side.
And around.
Through the middle and.
To the side.
To the side.
To the side.
To the side.
And around.
And around and around.
And around and around.
To the side. 2, 3, 4,
5.
6, 7, 8.
Through the midpoint.
Of the line drawn from the
left side.
Left side.
Left
side.
Element left. And around.
Element left.
And around.
And around.
And around.
And around.
Horizontally and vertically into four equal parts. One gray,
the wall is bordered and divided into four equal parts.
A red diagonal line from the lower left corner
red horizontal line.
It's kind of like Berio, the Velvet Underground, and a choir all had a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so the text of this is all Solowit, and I love Solowit. So they were working actually at Mass MoCA, and there's this big Solowit permanent installation there. And what I love about his drawings, quote unquote, is that he actually doesn't make the paintings or the drawings. He has a score for them, basically.
Oh.
All of the text that they sing in that Allemande. Uh-huh. These are all the instructions for these Solowit paintings. So it's like at the midpoint of the first line, draw a line diagonal to the whatever, and you know, and it's a sort of a combination of these scores for paintings, which I love that they exist.
Uh-huh.
And all of this great stuff. So in a second, they say the detail of the pattern is movement, which is so great and such a great concept. So
that
that's all.
Is brilliant.
The detail of a pattern is movement.
The detail.
I love it. I love it. Well, okay, we've got time before I have to let you go to do one more piece. Something in maybe a different direction that you're interested
yeah,
in.
Yeah, absolutely. So Donnacha Dennehy is an Irish composer who basically I think of his music as a mixture of three things.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, he has this real love of spectralism. But what that means in his music is something a little different than it means in like a bunch of French composers' music. So he loves the harmonic series. And the tuning, the way that we tune a piano, for example, which we're all used to hearing, is equal temperament, which means that every half step is the same distance apart from every other note.
Mm-hmm.
The actual harmonic series, and that's the way that literally everything around us vibrates, and the thing that makes a trumpet sound different than a viola sound different than a piano,
mm-hmm.
that's because of timbre. And timbre is something that we get as a result of the harmonic series. So which harmonics come out in a trumpet, those are different harmonics than in a viola. And that's why those two things sound different.
Gotcha. Okay.
So Donnacha, basically, one big sort of element of his music is the harmonic series. Another big element of it is this kind of ecstatic pulsing music that I think comes as a sort of grandson of minimalism, of minimalist music.
Yeah.
And the other big element is Irish traditional music, which is something that he, you know, was raised with, and it was some music that was really important. Actually, his first instrument was the recorder, which I find fascinating. And then he went to the flute later. But so there, these three things kind of come together in his music. And what I love about the harmonic series is he constantly toggles between this sort of spectral timbre music and music that's tuned the way we normally hear. So you'll be going along in his piece, and then all of a sudden the lens will shift, and we're just sort of looking at things with brand new glasses, and it's so cool.
Wow.
So this piece, Gra August Bas, is written entirely in Irish, in Gaelic.
Okay.
And it's based on some Shan Nos singing, which is like an old kind of melismatic traditional Irish vocal technique, which when you hear it by itself almost sounds like Middle Eastern to me. There's just a lot of melisma and a lot of really intense tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets this wonderful singer, Irla O'Leonard, to basically sing an unaltered Shan Nos song above this ecstatic vibrating bed of strings. And it's just some of the most completely exhilarating music I've ever heard. The title, Gra August Bas, actually means love and death.
Whoa.
So it's okay. Big topics.
In Sun Guinea, Shantuch, in Sun Guinea.
So right off the bat, we're hearing some of that harmonic series-y tuning.
Shantuch.
I see what you say about it sounding a little Middle Eastern.
Yeah, right?
Sounds like a call to prayer.
Exactly. It starts to sort of move and vibrate a little bit more. More and more excited. Oh man, if your listeners and you have time, listen to this whole piece. It's I think it's like a half hour long or something like that. It's just satisfying and amazing and beautiful. And the entire ending of it, the viola has this one very slow glissando over like 2 minutes straight from like one of the lowest registers on the instrument to like catastrophically high.
Wow.
It's just so satisfying and so beautiful.
Nice. So we mentioned Nico Muhly earlier, and I know you're a big fan of his. I think we can squeeze one more piece of music into the show. And you guys have collaborated together, right?
Yep. Yeah, we went to undergrad together.
Oh, okay.
And I think I met him somewhere around like 2002, 2003 at Juilliard. And we sort of learned really quickly that we work really well together.
Yeah.
But he's just a brilliant composer and a really great friend. And I would love to share with you some of the music that he's written under the name Drones. So he's written Drones and Violin, Drones and Viola, Drones and Viola da Gamba. And the first of those pieces that he wrote is the one that we're going to hear a little bit of called Drones and Piano.
Okay.
And what I love about this piece, and in fact all of these pieces, is he explains the inspiration for these pieces comes basically from that thing which I think we've maybe all done on some level, which is if there's a kind of standing machine noise in the room or on a plane or when you're vacuuming or whatever, you end up kind of making up these little harmonies to rub against it or singing little songs to yourself. And so Nico just was doing that so consistently that he was like, you know what? I'm just going to write some of these down.
That's great.
And Drones and Piano was the first of those. And what's really brilliant from a programming perspective, a live concert perspective, is like anyone can drone, you know? So he did like this great series of concerts at the Barbican in London and had just everyone in the room, like David Lang and Richard Reed Perry from Arcade Fire and Bryce Dessner and me and just a ton of us on stage droning before the concert even starts, just like playing this one note or this one set of pitches. He comes on stage, plays against it, which is super great, and then the drone continues.
That's
just really fun.
Well, I should have had him in a meeting I was having today. The emergency alert system thing was clicking in the studio we were in.
Oh, dear.
Could have been a brilliant piece.
Well, you know what? Like making lemons out of lemonade or the opposite of that or something.
Yeah, well, let's hear some of this.
He just tries each little thing, spins it out, starts over, you know.
Yeah.
It really does, especially at the beginning, it reminds me so much of that type of like idle brain play when you're in an airplane and forgot your noise canceling headphones and you're just hearing this like for a while, you know.
Yeah. And you start composing a little song along with it, like
absolutely.
I love it. I've got two more questions for you before you go today. I'm interested in what excites you about what's going on in classical music today, and what do you kind of wish would go away?
Huh. Well, so I'm excited just because I feel like the stuff that I'm hearing, there is an incredible amount of really good music being created right now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's just music that is my taste that's being created right now, but it's completely fascinating to me. What I love about this generation of young composers is that there's a real sense of community and a real sense of supporting each other and holding each other's work up. Mm. And, you know, there was a little bit of a kind of gross backstabby moment in contemporary classical music in America where there was this idea that, like, you were either writing cerebral music or you were writing overly emotional music, and both parties were, like, antagonistic towards each other. And even within those parties, there were people that were begrudging other people's success, you know?
Yeah.
And that was kind of the new music community that I grew up in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I think probably there's a bunch of reasons that it's not that way anymore, but a little bit of it is in relief of that. You know, our generation grew up and said, well, that seems not terribly fun or nice. And I see a lot of composers really helping each other out and really being interested in each other's work. And as a result, the whole thing just feels kind of joyful and exciting. And I think that the audiences also pick up on that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But I also think that our generation, like, literally has the internet.
Yeah.
So it's way easier just to be exposed to way more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to, like, well, first of all, in a kind of a slightly sad way, you don't really have to invest that much money in order to know a lot of music.
Right.
But you also don't have to make your way to the, like, right part of the CD store. And, you know, there's poetry and beauty in that being in that existing, and there's poetry and beauty in that not existing. So mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just it's an interesting moment for us on that front.
Yeah.
What was the other question you asked me?
What kind of trend or thing do you see happening in new classical music that you wish would kind of go away?
You know, I don't really begrudge anyone their passion. If the music exists, someone's into it, and that's great. And I think the cool thing about, like, being human is our differences and our weirdness. And, you know, I'm super psyched about the stuff I'm super psyched about, but I don't think that needs to exist to the exclusion of anything else, really.
Yeah.
I think that it's great that it exists, and I feel privileged to be able to participate in this world
mm-hmm.
and with these incredible artists. And yeah, I'm not sure I really wish anything would go away. Like, even concert formats that I find, like, not of my taste,
mm-hmm.
like, I think it's also really cool that they exist. And, like, some people are a little upset about the, like, stuffy classical music image. I actually think it's brilliant and great and lovely. Like, my concerts aren't like that, but mm-hmm. I love nothing more than getting dressed up and going to the opera and, like,
yeah.
having a billion glasses of champagne over intermission and, like, looking at people. I mean, it's so fun and so different. And so far from, like, when you come to a show that I might do, it's not going to feel like that. But I think there's room for everything. I really do.
Yeah, and sometimes those new things are born from pushing against other things, you know, like, and that
yeah.
doesn't necessarily mean that those things are bad, you know.
Yeah, and I feel like with classical music, like, I think that there's a ton of people around my age that don't know anything about classical music,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just sort of putting forth the idea that, like, a great place to start is what's going on right now. You're going to understand something
mm-hmm.
like intuitively about the music of our time, you know?
Right.
And then it works sense to, if you like Grizzly Bear or Yonsei, you should listen to Nico.
Yeah.
If you like Nico, you should listen to Stravinsky. If you like Stravinsky, you should listen to Ravel. If you like Ravel,
yeah.
you should listen to Satie. And my point is, like, working backwards from a perspective that you understand
uh-huh.
makes way more sense to me than, I think I'll get into classical music and, like, you put on Mozart and you're starting from, like, square
yeah.
zero.
That
you
makes
know?
So much sense. Like, actually starting from a place that you understand.
Totally.
And then working that, I love that. That's totally how my brain works. I'm gonna start.
Yeah, it's also very, like, internet-y logic, right? It's
yeah.
like you're on a web page that makes sense to you, and then you're like, I don't know what that is, and you click through and
yeah, you go down the rabbit
hole. Click through that. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Totally.
And music should be that kind of a discovery rabbit hole.
Absolutely. Nadia Sirota, thank you so much for being on the show today. This is a great talk.
Oh, it's been absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for having
you
me.
Come back sometime, and, like, best of luck with your show. We'll put links to you up on the web article when we put this one up.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care. All right, everyone, that does it for this episode. For more Classroom, go to HoustonPublicMedia.org/classroom. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us on Tumblr, on the YouTubes, on the SoundCloud, what have you. What have you is not a social media. Send me an email at dclay@HoustonPublicMedia.org. And remember, if you're listening to us on iTunes, make sure that you subscribe to us and rate and review us, because it helps us win podcasting. Thanks today to audio producer Todd Touche Hulslander for twiddling knobs. Thanks to program director Sinjin Flynn for his mind. It's like a steel trap. Thanks to editor Mark DiClaudio for his piercing glow stick eyes. Thanks to Nadia Sirota for being here today, and to the good people at WNYC and WQXR for their help with this episode. Thanks to me for saying words, but most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.